Support comes from Ohio University's Voinovich School of Leadership and Public Service, partnering with communities, agencies, and businesses to build capacity and improve the quality of life in Ohio. Our work focuses on economic development, workforce, leadership, behavioral health, energy, and the environment. Learn more at ohio.edu/Voinovich-school.
Hello, everyone. This is Jazzed About Work, where we talk about everything that might have an impact on your career. I'm your host, Bev Jones. I'm an executive coach, and I write about career issues. The issue for today is one that I hear about frequently, but it's not easy to be clear about it and to get it right. The topic is organizational culture, and our returning guest is Laura Hamill, a psychologist who has consulted with many companies about their cultures. Laura will tell us about her new book, The Power of Culture, Bringing Values to Life at Work. She'll describe some of the factors that shape a culture, and will explain why a positive culture is so important. She'll share tips that may help you shift the culture of your organization. And she'll describe why she now believes that at least some aspects of your culture must focus on human values, like caring for the whole person, belonging, integrity, and kindness. Laura, it's so great to have you here again. Thank you for coming back to Jazzed About Work.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Beverly. I'm excited to talk with you again.
It's been a while. Of course, we're going to talk today particularly about your new book, The Power of Culture, Bringing Values to Life at Work. And I'm kind of excited about your approach to culture. But before we get into all that, when you were last here, you were doing something interesting with, I think, something you were a founder of, Limeade. And now I notice that I think you sold them off and you're doing some other things. Will you tell us a little bit about what you do as an organizational psychologist and what you're doing these days?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the last time we talked, I was at Limeade. And yeah, it was really interesting. We sold the company to WebMD. So that was an interesting transition for me, something where I felt such an identity, because being a co-founder, right?
Yes.
And feeling this connection with creating this company. And so when I left, I had to really think hard about what do I want to do next? What do I want this to look like? And so it was harder than I thought it was going to be to figure that out. So it took
transitions can be surprisingly
yes.
difficult, even when you think you're ready.
That's right. And I know you do a lot of work in this space, Bev. But it took me a little bit. I had to process it, right? There was some grieving and there was some real like looking in the mirror and trying to figure out what do I want next. And so what I decided to do, I had a couple of things that finally emerged as things that I wanted to focus on. First, I wanted to figure out what are some topics that I wanted to study. And what are the kind of ways that I wanted to work? And so the ways I wanted to work kind of came easier. that was first of, I knew I wanted to be more of in a consulting capacity, working with lots of different companies. I find that mm-hmm. so interesting, right? To have that exposure
yes,
to different kinds of problems
it.
And chat, right? And so I've kind of happened on this approach to consulting that's more about having fractional roles. So meaning more of a kind of ongoing commitment to an organization over a longer period of time where you're working on particular projects, but it's not just a one deliverable or one project. So I've been working in fractional roles. And I've really enjoyed that. And then on top of that, to your kind of the point you made at the beginning, I got a book deal with The Economist, and I wrote a book on organizational culture. And that was one of the things that I got really clear about is that I wanted to study culture, because culture has been, to me, really the root cause of most of the topics that I've worked on in my career around employee engagement and employee well-being. There's always organizational culture is always at the heart of the issue. So I wanted to dig into it, and I wanted to really marry some of the things I knew about the science of culture with what I also had learned about the practice of culture.
Well, I was intrigued when I saw that you had a new book about that, because I know that you understand people. You've been very human focused in your career. And I agree with you that culture, sometimes it feels like it's everything. When I'm coaching with a new person, sometimes I work with lots of people from one organization and years go by and I get to have that sense of culture. But I notice one division may have a different culture than the other division, and the people in the organization don't even realize how different the cultures are. And the thing I hear the most is, oh, it's such a toxic culture. People, almost some percentage of every organization, think they're in a toxic culture, I think. And so it's something we're kind of all aware of. And I've had people talk here and jest about work and I'm trying to be educated. But I think it's more of a buzzword than a new understanding. Was that sort of your sense?
Yes, exactly. And that was part of my frustration is sort of we lump anything that's kind of people related into this bucket called culture. And that really, I think, holds us back from being able to do good work with culture, because we don't have a clear understanding of what it is and how we influence it. And also, I mean, this is one of the reasons why I wanted to write the book. The very nature of culture, what culture actually is what makes it so hard and challenging. And So it's sort of, you get into this circular kind of position with it where it's like, I know it's important. I know it's affecting everything, but I can't see it. I can't do anything about it. I can't act on it. And so that I'm really with you on it. It's something everybody knows matters, but very few organizations especially are being really intentional about it. And that's why I wanted to write the book.
Well, let's say that you are consulting. You've got a new fraction of activity, maybe. You're coming into an organization that's new for you. One of the things I like about your book is you talk about some of the attributes, some of the things that you look for in understanding a culture. So let's say you've got a new client, you're coming in cold, and what do you look for first when you're trying to get a quick idea, and then how do you go deeper?
Yeah. So when I'm thinking about working with a new organization, some of the things that I look for almost as warning signs or red flags, and maybe even would make me hesitate to work with a particular company, is when an organization doesn't understand the role that leaders and that power plays in terms of shaping culture. A red flag for me would be, come and work with some of our employees to help make our culture better. And that would be a worry for me, because what we know is that power plays a huge role in shaping culture. And this is one of the things that, one of the reasons why I wanted to call my book The Power of Culture, first of all, is because of that. But also the kind of misunderstanding of how we learn about culture. And so what happens when we join organizations is, and this is kind of what you were getting to, when we join an organization, we can see things pretty clearly because we had somewhere else that we came from, right? Where we had a different culture. So when you first start in an organization, you can see, oh my gosh, well, why is it that nobody asked any questions in the company meeting? Or why is it that nobody's eating lunch together? Or why does the CEO stay in her office all the time? Why doesn't she come out and talk to people? There are all these things that when you first start in an organization, you can see. But what happens over time, because we're learning organisms, is we start to look around us and we start to see what other people are doing. And we start to see, oh, I get it. I understand why we don't ask any questions in a company meeting. Yeah. And slowly you start to just kind of fall within that norm. You start to do what everybody else is doing. And it sounds like we're, you know, like victims to our circumstances. And I don't mean that at all. In fact, it's an amazing thing that we learn from our environment. And we start to do it so much so that it becomes natural. You just become kind of natural that, of course, we don't ask questions at
a
company meeting.
And you're blind to the weird stuff because it's normal now.
That's exactly right. You're blind to it. And it's that, you've heard that analogy of, you know, does a goldfish even know that it's swimming in water? It's the water around us that just becomes how we do things. And there's all of these ways that you learn all of that information over time. And so I think that's one of the primary problems is that we become such a part of it that we can't see it. So it's hard to change. One of the sources that we look to when we're in that learning process is we look to people who've made it in this system, in this organization. And people who've made it typically are people at the top, right? There are people in positions of power. So we say, gosh, that CEO, that's the person who ultimately has succeeded here. And they have all kinds of an understanding of how we do things here, why we do what we do. So I'm going to look to that person and take a lot of information in about how I should do things. What are the things that they say with their words that are important here? What do they say with their actions around what is important here? So you learn a lot from people in positions of power, especially. And so that's what I would look for as I would, you know, start working with an organization is, does the organization understand what culture is? Do they understand how leaders all day long, every day, are sending messages about what's important and what's not important? And that would be that kind of understanding, that fundamental understanding of culture would be one of the things I'd look to. And I'd say another one is, has the organization made the connection between culture and what the business is trying to achieve? That connection's really important. And that's what I see a lot of organizations do is they think of culture as this sort of fun work, you know, the stuff that we put over to the side and let's have somebody in HR drive it. And it's just all the fun stuff. It's the swag, it's the margaritas, it's the parties. And that is, to me, a worrisome sign. Because if you're doing that, you're likely haven't made the connection between thinking about how we are with each other and what we are saying we fundamentally value and how that aligns with what we're trying to achieve as a business. So if we're trying to create brand new innovation, brand new technology, how do we need to be together? How do we need to act with each other in order for that to happen? You can imagine there's probably some things around being able to come up with new ideas, being able to speak up and say something that might be a little risky, feeling like we are supporting each other when something bad happens because we're taking risks all the time. So you can see how we need to be with each other is going to align with what we're trying to achieve. So those are some of the things I would look for. It's really this deeper fundamental understanding of how culture works and how it's linked to business strategy.
So I think that's really interesting that you're looking at the link between culture and what it is that the organization wants to get done. I work with a lot of complex organizations that are not businesses exactly, like universities. Universities these days are more business-like than they ever have been before. But I see sometimes parts of a university will forget about education and the learning and all of those kind of things that you think you'd be creating a culture around so that everybody participates. And somebody comes in and tries to kind of run things like a general. It just doesn't work. So it's really, you have to understand kind of the ethic and the essence of the product or the activity and link the culture to that.
Yes, completely. I think you're right. And I think that example happens a lot in just in nonprofits too, right? Where it's like, come on, we need to get our act together, and we need to get ship shape, and we need to, you've probably heard of companies that say we're going to be a culture of accountability, and that's in reaction to poor business results or things not going the way that the organization needed it to, and it's very short sighted because it's not staying true to why we even exist in the first place. What our kind of underlying core purpose is as an organization, and how that needs to be reflected in the culture we're trying to create. And also, that's why a lot of people were drawn to come to that organization, is because of the purpose of what we're actually doing. And the example you shared in the university about learning and about, fundamentally, how do we support that learning? That should be core to what the university is focusing on. Now, you could say, in addition to that, we have some things that we need to focus on from just so we can continue to exist, that might mean we need to shape our way of doing business to be, maybe more focused on the financials. Sure, do that, but don't lose the core and the heart of what the point is in the first place of the organization.
So you need to have processes and systems and activity that works to get the job done. But it feels like you also have to be very aware of the mission and of the people who are doing all of these things. So you talk about bringing values, human values, into culture. And in your book, you caught my eye because we've talked before, and I regard you as a very human-focused person. Mm-hmm. And but you said something like, you now realize how important it is for at least some of the attributes of a culture to be focused on human values. What was your aha to get even more human focused? And mm-hmm. talk a little bit about what these human values are, if you would, that have to be part of a culture.
Yeah, I think, in my experience, I just have seen over and over again this disconnect between culture and the business. And I saw that as such a huge gap. I mean, over and over again, I'd work with these companies who'd say, we're focusing on culture, but they've never, ever connected it to what they're trying to achieve. So I was so focused on, wait a second, don't you understand that you need to connect this? Don't you understand that you need to think about how it is that we are together? That has to be aligned, that alignment with what your business is about is so important. And so I think I just kind of got hyper-focused on that for so long that I was in some ways kind of agnostic to what the culture is that you're trying to create, as long as you make that really clear connection to the business. But then I started to see over and over again, companies that started to have that connection between the culture and the strategy. In some ways, like they talk about, we need to change this about, how we are working together in order for us to win in with our business. And they leave out whole sections of, to me, how it is that employees need to be really listened to, seen, the way we need to support our employees, how we need to make sure that we're caring about them as human beings, that would be missing from the equation of, creating this aspirational culture. So that, to me, I started to realize I shouldn't be agnostic to what kind of culture you're trying to create. I really believe that seeing human beings in the mix and talking about how we need to value people, the people who work here, in order for this business to succeed, how important that is. And so I'll give you an example of a healthcare company that I was working with, where they were pretty clear about how we needed to work together in order to achieve some financial goals. They were pretty financially focused. And what was so ironic is the employees were so the value that they felt like they were providing was about giving care to patients. And that care was something they actually weren't experiencing in their day-to-day work from each other or from their managers or leaders. So the really internal focus on financials, but the external focus on care created a real disconnect and a real sense of betrayal, I think, for the employees. It's like, how do I reflect something or do this really important work with my patients when I don't feel that myself, when I don't feel like this organization cares about me? How do I continue to feel like the sense of caring for my patients? And they would put that all out there, but their kind of bucket never got full on their own kind of personal side. They never felt that sense of care themselves. And so think about how different it might be if they did feel like, oh, wait, this organization cares about me. I experience that on a daily basis. I understand that viscerally. It's way easier then to give that care to my patients. And so that disconnect and not focusing on the people, but then expecting the people to give so much of themselves to the patients. That's what I started to kind of realize. We have to really articulate that in our cultures. We have to show how important it is for human beings to feel valued here and to feel like their ideas matter, their thoughts, the things that they really, you know, come up with at work. We care about that, and that they feel that sense of purpose. So that's really what I've become, and it's sort of so obvious when you say it out loud, but I realized in the past I was kind of agnostic to that.
Well, I've done just a little bit of work with people who work in brokerage finance kind of situations. And I think that's an example that's worth thinking about. At least in a health-based organization, you're focused on taking care of people at some point. But in a financial organization, it's easy to start thinking only about the money, and you forget that you're working for the people. So what happens is maybe the systems and everything are working, but the pressure is on making more money. And there's no interaction on with the individuals who really, from you, I think as a client, I want my broker to have integrity. I want them to be aware of my needs. I want them to call me if something is happening. I very much value, and I've been fortunate in having, guidance from somebody who cares about me. And I think that's an area where there have been some really big companies just lose the way by having workers do anything to bring in more money at the process undercutting their own customers. Is that an area where culture really needs a look?
Absolutely. Especially, I think that this is one area in the culture space that we don't spend as much time with, is thinking about how the core kind of functionality of the business, the type of business, the core roles you have, how that influences your culture, and how you might want to balance that in some ways. So for example, I think the financial services example is a great one, but you could also think about in technology, you know, having software developers as your core functionality. What do software developers do in their work, right? They're thinking about, for sure, things like being innovative, pushing boundaries, trying new things. So that's could be considered more of a positive aspect of the culture. But they're also looking for bugs and problems and being pretty critical and working really hard to uncover those kinds of things. So you have to think about what that kind of the core set of roles in your organization are, and how that influences what you fundamentally value, because that might be something that you want to emphasize, the tech, that maybe being innovative, but there might be some pieces to that that you might want to balance. So the idea of looking for bugs and being really critical. I used to work at Microsoft, and it was a long time ago, but it was all about precision questioning and really like digging into the problem. And that was directly mm-hmm. reflected from being a software company, right? And the downside of precision questioning, of really like asking lots of really hard questions, was that a lot of times people shut down and they didn't feel like they could actually bring something up unless they had it so perfectly thought through all the way down to the zero and the one. And so people might not bring up hard things or things that they haven't thought through all the way down to the nth degree. So how do we balance the conditions that we create in our cultures with some of the things that are so strong because of the very nature of our business?
Yeah, it is a delicate dance, isn't it? Well, another question I have for you. It is clear that the leaders at the top can have a tremendous impact on culture, even if they say one thing, if they're not living it and acting like it, it's not going to matter. But I want to think about all of the people who are kind of middle managers, who are leaders of a division, or maybe they have just a small team. My observation is that in a complex organization, like I said in the beginning, I've worked with big organizations and I work over here and it'll be kind of stiff and formal and people don't ask questions. And then over there, people are much more engaged with each other and supportive of one another. So my belief, my observation is that even if you're working in a big organization, which is not as human focused as you might like to see it, wherever you are, you can make a contribution to the culture. And as a manager, you can make a big change for your little group. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I think it's important, I think, for us to understand that we all can do something about this. I have this huge caveat that I can come back to, but I do think that a manager, for example, with their team, there are things that they can do, like just generally talking about the idea of culture and the culture that people are experiencing. So what is it like to be on this team? What are the things that you think we actually value? How can we have more of a conversation about what your current experience is, and maybe some ways that we want to change that? And so I think there's all kinds of things that a manager can do in being consistent with the way they actually demonstrate the company values, how they emphasize the company values on the team. So I agree with you. The big caveat, the thing that I also don't want people to, I believe, misconstrue, is that they can change culture in radical ways without the help of power. And I know that that can be really a bummer, but power is so important to actually being able to do large-scale change. And this is one of the things that I see so many employee groups just beating their heads against the wall of trying to make really whole-scale changes without having people in positions of power who are behind that change or driving that change. And so I never want to send a message that you know, go work really hard and change the culture from the ground up, because I really believe there's a role that all of us play, but it's really hard to make fundamental, you know, big change without the highest levels of power involved. That said, we can make our own work situations better. And I know we know that intuitively. When you think about some of the people who you sit side by side with, you know, either in little Zoom, in Microsoft Teams or Zoom, or in person, that those people who you are around all day long make a big difference in your experience. And I think a manager can think about his or her own behavior and how they are consistent and really supportive with the people that they work with. But one of the things that I think gets a little underlooked is this idea of our practices. So our behavior absolutely matters. But what are some of the things that we just do in our day-to-day work that we kind of take for granted, that we don't even question, that might be holding us back or might be really great examples of the kind of culture we're trying to create? So if you take, for example, how we do one-on-ones or how we meet as a small, as a team, you know, sometimes one-on-ones can be so boring and so just, you know, status updates, something that could just be over an email. But what if that one-on-one actually reflected the culture that that manager wants to create, where they're talking about, you know, how the team is performing and how that person feels supported? You know, you can change what your one-on-ones are like. You can change what you talk about in team meetings. You can change, you know, the agenda of team meetings. Who's even running the team meetings? Maybe you rotate who runs the team meetings. There's a lot of control we have in the day-to-day practices that could make a big difference or start to show employees that this is real and that this is something kind of exciting that we can control.
Well, as a coach, where kind of listening is a big part of it all, one thing I would say is that managers who are trying to make a difference, but they don't know quite how, often the starting point is to kind of pause and listen in new ways and ask questions that are curious and not judgmental. Yeah. So one way to that coaching can change a culture when a whole organization is doing it is that people at the tops tend to listen a little bit more carefully. And that's one good way, I think, to create a more human focused. That's my little advertising for coaching.
Yeah.
But the research shows it really works, doesn't it?
Completely. And I love that so much. If you actually listen, you know, like to really be open and, like you said, non-judgmental about what you're hearing, to try to uncover and to understand more in a deeper way. And I think this is one of the things in my experience that I also why I focus so much on the power piece of it is that leaders don't have the same experience of the culture that employees do. But I think they do.
Yes.
They think that, oh, my experience with this culture is pretty darn good. And, and it's like, wait, you've got to understand that you are experiencing this culture in a very different way than a frontline employee is. And, you know, it doesn't take, you see how power changes things. I remember when I got a title change when I was working at Microsoft. I got a title change. And all of a sudden, people were absolutely more interested in me, reaching out to me, people I knew, but just they were treating me very differently just because my title changed. And so that's just a tiny little example. But if you think if you're a CEO of a company, that's on steroids, right? There's a whole bunch of different ways that people treat you differently because of your role. And I think that leaders need to understand that their experience is very different. And it's sometimes hard for people to put themselves in other people's shoes and understand that, right? So that really makes it hard for the culture change to happen too, because they don't see sometimes that there's any problem.
Well, we're just about out of time here. There's so many things we can talk about, but I think that bringing human values into the discussion, wherever you are, for our listeners out there who are trying to make some change, you know, you start with noticing where people are and listening to them and looking for ways that kindness could be helpful. Is that a good starting point if you're just kind of finding your way and they haven't bought your book yet?
I think kindness is a perfect place to start. The idea of just treating people as human beings, and this is if you don't really feel like your organization overarchingly is focusing on culture in the way that you would like them to be, or you know, one of the things that I see happening in lots of organizations is there are some really great values that are on the website or behind the receptionist desk, but they're not what's really experienced. And you know, I have a term in my book that I call it cultural betrayal, when you kind of or think you're in for one thing and you get sold something completely different. It really does land as kind of a pretty dramatic feeling of like, wait, I was sold this and that's not what at all what
it's I It's a real letdown.
It's a real letdown and people can really withdraw. So if you feel like you're in that situation, but you still need to keep working there, I think what you just said, Beverly, is such a good point. Think about how we can just be more human with each other. Listening is a huge part of that. But just being kind to each other, thinking about maybe where people are coming from. I always, and this is why, like, I originally was interested in this topic of culture. It's about why, right? Why are we doing what we're doing? What's fundamentally underlying all the things that are happening? And so if you think about that on a one-on-one kind of human-to-human level, why are people doing what they're doing? You know, to be kind and assuming that there's a reason why, that they, every person has a story, right? Every person has a set of experiences that they're bringing to the table that kind of make them be the way that they are. So let's approach that from a sense of kindness and a curiosity to understand why. And I think when we understand what people are going through, what their stories are, it'll help us. It's so much more in terms of how we create better places to work, how we are with each other will just be a lot better.
I agree. And I thank you for being here today. Let me say the book title one more time. It's The Power of Culture, Bringing Values to Life at Work. I hope people are able to help their cultures become not toxic, but instead supportive with the help of your book, Laura. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much, Beverly. So good to talk with you.
Today, we've been talking with psychologist Laura Hamill about creating organizational cultures that are built around human values. I'm your host, Beverly Jones, author of Find Your Happy at Work. Nathan Kane is our audio director. And our sponsor is the Voinovich School of Leadership and Public Service at Ohio University. Today's tip is that in a work crisis, one starting point is to pause and consider all the people who might be impacted in some way and think about how their viewpoint might be helpful. Thanks for listening, and if you enjoyed today's show, please come back soon.